From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Well, you think you're excited now. We have got such a great show for you today. Mavis Staples, the legendary Chicago R&B and gospel singer, will be right here with us on stage to play our game. But first, speaking of Chicago, my home, I had the occasion to visit some relatives in a less colorful state. And goodness, were they merry. How much is a Senate seat going for there these days, they say? We understand you guys just arranged to have the politicians paid automatically out of your credit card account. Ha ha. Well, we Chicagoans have been getting a lot of that lately. A lot of messages from friends and well-wishers elsewhere about our home. And I want to respond in a classic, friendly, Midwestern Chicago way. Bleep off. Because, you know, as everybody now knows, that's how we talk here.
You bleeping, bleep.
We pre-delete our expletives for you, because that's that's how we roll. So anyway, that's how we talk. How do you talk? Call us up. Answer some questions about the week's news. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Nick Simon from Yosemite National Park in California.
Yosemite itself? You're calling from the national park?
Correct.
I didn't know there were phones there. I don't see those in the pictures.
There's a few. There's even a little bit of cell phone reception every once in a while.
Really? That seems wrong somehow to have cell phone reception. What do you do there?
I am a bar manager at a lodge.
Oh.
Is it like The Shining right now, sort of?
It does get that way. Yes, it does.
Okay. Well, that's somewhat alarming, but we're glad to have you with us.
The lonely winter months.
Let's see if we can keep you calm through our game. Let me introduce you first, though, to our panel this week. First, say hello to the woman behind the syndicated advice column, Ask Amy. Her name is Amy Dickinson.
Hello, Amy.
Hi.
And next, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe and the author of the forthcoming book, Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce, right there.
Hello, Mr. Pierce.
Hey. So anyway, two grizzly bears in a mountain goat walk into a bar, right?
That's not a joke. That's his last week. And finally, he's a humorist and the author of the new book, Alphabet Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt Jr., right here.
Hello, Mr. Jr.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, welcome to the show, Nicholas. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, of course, starts us off with three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I am ready.
All right, here we go. Here's your first quote.
This is a farewell kiss from the Iraqi people, you dog!
Everybody in the auditorium, I want you to know, just reflexively ducked. That was a man named Muntader al-Zaidi, and that's what he shouted as he did what?
The shoe. Yeah.
The shoe, yes. This is the guy who threw his shoes at President Bush. Finally, at the very end of his term, America was able to take real pride again in their president, as he was skillfully and quickly able to duck something other than responsibility.
Pretty quick, too.
No, he was quick. He was fast. He had good reflexes. Al-Zaidi was wrestled to the floor after he threw the shoes, and then some say he was beaten by Iraqi security guards, although it is unclear if that was because he threw the shoes or because he missed.
You know what I liked about that, though, is Maliki never moved. Mm. And I'm from Baghdad. Unless it's an RPG, I'm not flinching.
Exactly.
But somebody asked me, why did the president not stay down after he ducked the first time? I mean, why come back up for the second shoot? And I figured he just didn't have time to do the math. You know?
Now, a lot of people were talking about the political ramifications of this, what this means for President Bush's legacy, but that's not what we were wondering about. We were wondering about the guy himself, the journalist, Muntadhar al-Zaidi, what's in store for him. So to provide some expert commentary, We are pleased to welcome none other than Bill Lee, also known as Spaceman, the legendary pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. Bill Lee, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Well, thanks for having me.
Pleasure. So what do you think of the guy's arm?
I thought he got off, like Billy the Kid, he got off two shoes faster than anybody I ever saw. my wife actually said that he took them off one at a time and threw them. That's how fast he was.
That's quick. That's quick. Well, what do you think of his motion to the podium, as they say?
Well, he pronated well. He didn't throw anything down the middle. You know, he started him off a little low and away, and then he tried to knock him down with a high hard one.
It's funny because he was throwing the high heat, and I could have sworn I saw Al Maliki's signal for some breaking stuff. But.
I know he was young at it, you know, he was a rookie. But
yeah, I understand. Do you think this guy has a future maybe in the major leagues? He certainly has the temper for it.
Well, he's definitely a closer because Bush, that's the last thing he'll remember when he's there.
That's true. Bill Lee was an all-star pitcher for the Boston Red Sox in the 60s and 70s and the author of four books on his life and times. Bill Lee, thank you so much for being with us today.
Wow. Good luck.
All right, Nicholas, here is your next quote.
I began to think about my options. I'd have to sell the cottage in West Palm Beach immediately. I'd need to lay off Yolanda. And who could highlight my hair for almost no money?
That was Alexandra Penny. She's a New Yorker who's one of the many wealthy people who are now formerly wealthy people because they invested their money with whom?
Oh, what was his name? Mad. Starts with an M.
It does.
You might say he made off with their money.
Madoff.
Exactly. Bernard Madoff.
No, it's Madoff.
It's Madoff.
It's even more Dickensian than I thought.
Yeah.
Scads of wealthy investors were shocked to discover that Bernard Madoff's exclusive investment fund was a scam, a $50 billion Ponzi scheme. They never dreamed he was cheating them. They assumed he was cheating other people for their benefit. Madoff admitted everything to authorities, but then he offered an unusual plea deal to the feds. He said he'll find five other criminals to do his time for him, and then they each can find five others to do their time. And in a related story, investigators are looking into a claim that a Milwaukee man is swindling bar owners by hitting the sides of jukeboxes and getting free songs, a so-called Fonzie scheme.
Oh. Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Until you start throwing shoes, as far as I'm concerned, I'm doing great.
Peter, that was awesome.
All right. Nicholas, here's your last quote.
The first thing out of her beautiful mouth should be, I love upstate New York, and I can't wait to get there.
That was former New York City Mayor Ed Koch. He is giving advice to somebody who suddenly wants to be the senator from New York. Who?
I have an idea, but how about a little hint?
Sweet.
This is a woman who's not herself tremendously well known for her good works, but she does have a very famous name and very famous parentage.
Nothing could be finer than.
Nope, I lost.
How about Caroline Kennedy? You hear about this?
No.
That hasn't made out to this somebody.
He hasn't heard about Neil Diamond. What?
Now, Ms. Kennedy used to be known by her married name, Caroline Kennedy Schlossberg, but then she started dabbling in politics last year, so now she wants to be known as Caroline Kennedy Schlossberg Kennedy. Having decided that she would like to be Hillary Clinton's successor in the United States Senate, she strolled up to Albany to ask the governor to name her to the seat. It seems a bit presumptuous, but she did leave a generous tip. Critics say she
not by Illinois standards, she did.
Critics say she's just trying to cash in on her famous family and that she's never even traveled to upstate New York before. She says that's not true. Once she got on an express subway train by mistake and went all the way to 125th Street. Carl, how did Nicholas do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. He had two correct answers, so Nick, you win our prize.
Well done.
There you go, Nick.
Thanks for playing, Nicholas.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roy, we've got good news if you haven't done your Christmas shopping and you've got a guy on your list with big appetites. Who has announced a new signature cologne?
a guy with big appetites.
Yeah. Cologne for the carnivore in your
cologne
circle of friends.
People who eat meat.
Yes. That's what...
Venison by Lancôme.
There was a... Give me a hint.
Give me a... Well, it has a top aroma of flame-broiled meat with notes of gristle, bun, and mayo.
I knew them. They were a great act. Gristle, bun, and mayo.
The guy, the Whopper guy, Mr...
The company with the Whopper is...
Burger King.
Burger King. Burger King cologne. Burger King has put out a cologne.
Burger King cologne?
Yes. It may be a gag. It's called Flame, the cologne. But if it is a gag, they're pushing it with a very straight face. The scent is available at specialty retailers. It's called by Burger King, quote, a body spray of seduction.
Oh!
Of flame-broiled meat.
Is it on the little table next to the mustard in the kitchen?
No, apparently not. Early tests have resulted in men being chased down the street by packs of feral dogs.
Now, and oddly enough, packs of feral women are running in the other direction.
The website offering it is called firemeatsdesire.com. I recommend it. It features Burger King's spokesmonarch lying naked on a bearskin rug in front of a fire and beckoning you forward towards him. This may be a subtle campaign to sell more lunches by forcing you to lose the one you already have. And now it's time for the game where we ask impressive people about unimpressive things. Mavis Staples began singing with her family gospel group, the Staples Singers, as a child and then provided the living soundtrack for Dr. King's civil rights movement in the 60s. Then she went solo with the legendary Stax record label to become one of the greatest R&B and soul performers of all time. She's an inductee in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for her songs like I'll Take You There, Respect Yourself. She's one of Chicago's living treasures. She is here with us right now, Mavis Staples. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Oh, Mavis, thank you so much. Can we say, on balance, it's a great time to be from Chicago? On balance?
Yeah. Chicago, you know, is the most beautiful city in the world to me.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Yes, it is. You know, Pops came to us one time and said, y'all know, they said, if we move to Los Angeles.
No, I'm just interrupting. This is Pop Staples, your father.
Pop Staples, yes.
Who led, of course, the great gospel group, the Staples.
Yes, he did. You all know, the managers are saying if we move to Los Angeles, we stand a better chance of making it. You know, if you're already out there, you know, then you get a better chance. And he asks us, do y'all want to move to Los Angeles? And all of us in harmony said, no, Daddy. We didn't want to move.
So it's true, you started singing with your family when you were how old?
I was 8 years old.
You were 8 years old?
8 years old.
On the road performing?
No, we didn't start. We were at home on the floor, you know. When we were rehearsing, we started singing. My aunt lived with us. She came through one night and she said, y'all sound pretty good. I believe I want y'all to sing at my church. And we were happy. You know, that Sunday we were going to sing someplace other than on the living room floor. And went to Aunt Katie's church and we sang the very first song that Pops taught us. And that, you know, the people liked us so much they clapped us back.
All right.
And we had to sing that same song over and over. So, because it was the only one he had taught us all the way through.
But you have to tell us what that song is.
Oh, that song is, will the circle be unbroken
by and by, Lord, by and by.
Yeah. So after that, they clapped us back so much, Pop said, well, shucks, these people like us. We're going home and learn some more songs.
And
the rest is history.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody's ever pointed this out to you, but you have a rather distinctive voice. And did you always have that? Did you always?
I've always had. I used to have fights.
Really?
You know, kids at school. You sound like a boy. You sound like a... And a cappella teacher. I wanted to sing in the a cappella choir. He would tell me always, Mavis, come out of the basement. You're with the boys. You're singing with the boys. You know, and Mr. Finch, I'm not a soprano. My voice, I would wake up, someone, when we started traveling, I called down for breakfast. The lady would say, yes, Mr. Staples. So I just started to taking it.
Now, you said you were traveling. So after a while, your family began going out on the road, performing gospel music and other places. And that's an odd way for a young woman to grow up, isn't it?
No, well, being with your family is fun. But actually, we didn't start traveling until after we made this record for VJ Records called Uncloudy Day. And I was actually singing bass. You know, wow. And people, we started getting letters from everywhere, and Pop says, well, these people want us to come out. We would drive. Yeah. And we'd get to these places, and this jockey say, this is little Mavis Staples, little girl singing this. People would actually bet that I was not a little girl. Yeah. There's got to be a man or a big fat lady.
Were you ever at home in school, or were you on the road all the time?
Oh, yes. I didn't miss any of my childhood.
Really?
I don't know. We would travel on the weekends. Pops would come to school and tell the teachers, give Mavis some homework. She won't be back on Monday. I would always get back to school on Tuesday.
So you were like a schoolgirl in the week, and on the weekends you were traveling a singing star. You were like the gospel Hannah Montana. I don't think that's... I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Hannah Montana, she has a tutor, doesn't she?
I think she does. I'm not sure. Right. You didn't have that.
We couldn't afford a tutor.
So, there's so much to cover, and we don't have enough time, but in the 60s, you guys, I don't know how it first happened. You sang at a rally where Martin Luther King was speaking, or you met him through performing, right?
We met him. We happened to be in Montgomery, Alabama on a Sunday. Right. And that Sunday morning, we were singing that night. That Sunday morning, Pops called us to his room. He said, listen, y'all, this man Martin is here. He had been here on the radio. Yeah. Dr. King had a radio show. And Pops said, he has a church here. I want to go to his 11 o'clock service. Do you all want to go? We said, yes, sir, we want to go. We all went to Dr. King's church. We were ushered in. Someone let him know that we were in the service. And he acknowledged us, said, I'm happy to have Pop Staples and his daughters here this morning. And we hope you enjoy the service. After the service, Dr. King stands at the door to shake the worshipers' hands as they file out. My sisters and I, we walked past, shook his hand. And when Pops got to him, he stood there and talked with him for a while. He finally came on. We get back to the hotel. He called us to his room again. He said, listen, y'all, I really like this man's message. I like his message. And I think that if he can preach it, we can sing it. Hmm. And that's when we started writing freedom songs. Why Am I Treated So Bad was his favorite. And we would be going to a meeting. Dr. King would tell Pops, now, Stape, you're going to sing my song tonight, right? Hmm. And Pops would say, oh, yeah, doctor, we're going to sing your song. We would sing before he would speak. And that would be Why Am I Treated So Bad.
You work with everybody in music. In fact, you work with Bob Dylan, we understand.
Yeah, Dylan. You know, we met Dylan like in 62, and his manager said, won't you meet the Staples singers? He said, oh, I know the Staples singers. I've listened to the Staples singers since I was 12 years old. But he even quoted a lyric out of one of ours. He said, Mavis be singing Yonder Come Little David with his rockin' sling. I don't want to meet him. He's a dangerous man. And it just blew Pops' mind. But then he started singing his song, and Pops said, listen, y'all, you hear what that kid is saying? And he was saying, how many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man? And that Pops could relate to that. So he said, we can sing that song. And we did.
I bet you did.
Yeah, we came right home and learned it.
I gotta ask, you actually and Dylan became quite close, right?
Oh, you know. Oh, Dylan. Yeah, Dylan was, he.
All right. That's fine, man.
We were good friends.
We were good friends.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
Bob, you know, he was a cutie back then. He was.
He really was. Curly. He had that curly hair.
Didn't he, ain't?
Yeah.
He had curly hair. I don't know how that got out. Someone, that internet.
Yeah. You know,
the that doggone internet. You know, one disc jockey said, "Well, I hear you and Dylan, you know, proposed marriage to you." I said, "Where did you get that from?" "The internet."
Well, then it must be true.
It's got to be true.
Well, yes, indeed.
And what was your response to this question?
Well, you know, I cannot tell a lie. I'm Pop Staples' daughter. But I didn't acknowledge it. You know, I just said, after he told me where, I said, those internet people just need to mind their own business.
Yeah.
You know, but Dylan, the way he did that, he just did it out of the blue. He proposed.
Pops, out of the blue.
What he told Pops. He didn't tell me.
What, Bob Dylan asked your father for your hand in marriage?
He didn't ask. He told Pops.
He told him.
Pops,
he's a lot braver than
me.
He's a lot braver than I thought he was.
Yeah. Was
what did he say to your father?
Pops, I want to marry Mavis. And Pop said, well, don't tell me, tell Mavis.
You little pisha.
That was during the time, it was lunch. Everybody heard him. We were in line, you know, to get our lunch.
Wait a minute. You're standing in line?
Yeah.
At like some sort of buffet?
That's right.
And he's standing there behind your father and says, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
I want to marry your daughter, and can I have the potatoes? What?
He just shouted it. I guess it just came over him.
I understand.
Something came. Something got
I
hold of
I feel it now. I totally am down with that. I want to talk about somebody else who at least we know is a fan of yours because he used your song at his campaign rallies, Mr. Barack Obama.
Obama,
yeah.
Mama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must be.
Yeah.
That's a sign. They were playing. I'll take you there, right?
I'll take you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard it many times in his campaigns. And I was very happy for him, you know.
Did they reach out to you at all? Have you met the man?
Not at all.
You're
you know,
kidding me.
We belong to the same church.
Yeah.
And Barack.
Barack. I make the same mistake.
You did that. Barack. When he was at church, we weren't there.
Right.
When we were in church, he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So we never had the opportunity to meet him.
Right.
But I was very happy for him. I was very happy that he is the president-elect. That night, I didn't make it to Grant Park. I was at home. I was just filled with joy. I tried to do a cartwheel.
How'd that go?
I couldn't get up there.
I understand.
I couldn't get up.
I understand. But we don't understand this. We understand that for the inauguration, the Obama people have picked some other singer, this Aretha something.
Wow.
She's not from Chicago.
Oh, what's her name?
Yeah. I don't understand what's up with that.
Riri. It's good. It's all good. You know.
Well, you're a very gracious person. But I'm just saying, because I know, I'm sure Barack Obama drops everything to listen to this show. I'm just saying, Chicago born, Chicago, you know, this is you got to represent Hyde Park, Mr.
President.
I think she should be there. It was your song that put him over the top, so,
yes,
you know,
yes.
I'm just saying.
Yes, I should be there. You know, I've been to Kennedy's inauguration, Carter, and Clinton. Why am I not at Barack Obama?
I don't know. I think something should be done about this.
Yeah, Peter, fix it for me.
I will. You have no idea what sway I have.
I can. Hey,
I am a public radio host.
I know that's right. I know that's
when
right.
I say
right,
jump.
You could give Barack Obama like a mug or something.
And does he do anything for that? Well, Mavis Staples, we are so delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game. We're calling.
Hello. I'm looking for a dozen highlighter pens in a fluorescent green.
Which is a question we're sure you get all the time by the people who confuse you with Staples, the office supply superstore.
Oh. Ah.
But since you are not a vast warehouse filled with office implements, we thought we'd ask you three questions about office supplies.
Oh.
If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Mavis Staples playing for?
Mavis is playing for Henry Herman of Falls Church, Virginia.
Are you ready to do this?
I'm ready.
You can do this. You can handle any challenge.
I can tell.
We begin with the stapler. This office device was invented, strange as it may seem, by whom? A, President Millard Fillmore, who frittered away his time in office trying to improve the efficiency of White House filing. B, King Louis XV of France, who desired a way to affix gold metal seals to his documents. Or C, Isaac Newton, the great physicist who tried to market it as a toy?
Oh.
Millard Fillmore, Louis XV, Isaac Newton. One of them invented the stapler.
I think I'll go with Brother Fillmore. Did he do it?
I'm sorry, it was actually Louis XV of France invented the stapler. I know, I'm sorry about that. He did want to put his little gold seals on his little documents. All right, we still have two more chances here.
Okay.
Next office product, Scotch tape.
Oh, wow.
How did it get its name, Mavis? How did Scotch tape get its name? A, it was named after the sound it makes when you tear off a long strip, like scourge. B, it was first marketed during the great Scottish fad of the 1920s when all the products were being sold in tartan with kilts and shillelaghs. Or C, it was a rude ethnic joke aimed at the owners of the company who were too Scottish and thus cheap to put more glue on the tape.
Ah. You know, that one you said they were wearing the kilts. Let's go with him.
You're going to go with that. You're going to go with that. It was just a big Scotch thing. Everything,
yeah,
everything cool.
Yeah.
Like instead of like I in front of everything, everything was Scots or man.
Scotch.
It was actually it was an ethnic joke. I'm sorry. It was.
Oh,
I've never felt
Peter.
Worse. I feel terrible.
Peter.
Don't make it worse.
Why you treat me so bad? I tell you. I've been good.
Well, actually, what happened with the Scotch tape, not that it's important, was that they were testing it and they gave it to the first people to use and they said, take this tape back to those Scotch bosses of yours and tell them to put more adhesive on it. And the name stuck and it became.
So that's not an ethnic joke?
That's very offensive, don't you think, Roy?
Yeah. Scots American.
I don't even like to hear it repeated.
I don't.
All right, last question.
Okay.
We bring you the adding machine. The first practical adding machine was invented by William Seward Burroughs in the 1880s, but it had a small flaw. What was it? A, if you added too many numbers too quickly, it would catch fire. B, the results you got depended on how hard you pulled the handle. Or C, if you wanted to subtract numbers, you had to disassemble the machine, a process that took 2 hours every time.
I like that.
You know that, the
I
disassembling?
Like that. Yeah, disassemble it, you know, and let's hang loose with it. it take 2 hours.
To disassemble it, in case you wanted to take a number. To
and what was this about?
This is. It was about nothing of any importance whatsoever.
Oh, Peter.
No, it was about adding machines. You know,
did I win
thing.
Anything for
well,
you?
Well, hold on.
Oh, yeah. I
should mention just in passing that, in fact, the right answer was B. But that's not important right now. Did you know that the guy who invented the adding machine, his grandson was William
Burroughs?
Yeah, William Burroughs, the writer.
Ah.
Who knew that?
Wow.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Did you know that?
Well, that,
I didn't know.
That
I didn't
makes
know
it all better, Peter.
It does, yeah. Good. Carl, how did Mavis Staples do in our quiz?
Not too well, Peter. She needed at least two correct answers to win for Henry Herman.
Yeah. Oh, Henry.
Yeah.
Henry. Oh, Henry.
Oh, Henry.
I think he just made his day.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sorry.
Say his name in that voice of yours, and I think he'll feel fine.
He'll put that on his answer machine.
Yeah. Oh, Henry.
Hey! All right. I would much rather just talk to you than do anything else, so I'm going to ask you a couple more questions. Now, you've got a new CD out. It's called Live Hope at the Hideout, right? Hideout here in Chicago. Great, great little club.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're not going to stop performing, are you?
Oh, no way.
No way.
No way.
No way. Bless your heart for that.
No way.
Mavis Staples is a Hall of Fame singer and soul.
Thank you.
Your latest album, Live Hope at the Hideout, available now. Mavis Staples, thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Mavis.
I know a place. Ain't nobody crying. Ain't nobody worried.
In just a minute, Carl Castle becomes a medium for voices in the week's news. Another round of Who's Carl this time. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel some questions about this week's news. It's time to introduce first what will probably be a short-lived segment on the show. We're calling it...
They're not willing to give me anything except appreciation? Bleep them!
In which we take our shots at the Illinois governor before his alien masters call him home. Roy!
Yeah.
According to the New York Times, aides to Blago are terrified of his ranges, especially when they fail to have at the ready something he likes to call his football in honor of the president's famous nuclear football. What is Governor Blagojevich's football?
Football. I have to think it has to do with his hair.
It does, boy. It does.
The dryer.
Clothes.
The hot comb.
You're almost there. His hairbrush. I'll give it to you. Yeah.
It's a special.
The football. Is
it like hydraulic or something?
No, it's like a special Mason Pearson, bull bristle hairbrush.
Mm. It's actually a Paul Mitchell.
Oh, it's a Paul Mitchell.
That's
I'm
the preferred
sorry.
Brand of the governor of Illinois. Paul Mitchell's stock just tanked as I said that. It's black in color, and it must be within easy reach of the governor at all times, or you will find out, my friend, what lurks behind that perfect pompadour, and that is your next butt-whooping. We also learned from the Times that Blago almost never shows up for work, either at Springfield, which happens to be, in case he doesn't know, the capital of this state, or his office in Chicago, for that matter. He's always late for everything, and every friend he's ever had who doesn't work for him now hates him, including his own father-in-law. And we also learned, I think originally from Time Out Chicago, that once when he was in his 20s, when he was footloose and fancy-free, and this is true, he took a cross-country trip to visit the home of his personal idol. He parked on that man's lawn. He refused to leave until that man emerged and gave him an autograph. Who was Rob Blagojevich's personal hero? Richard Nixon.
Oh, yeah, I heard he liked it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nixon and Elvis. The hair of one and the ethics of the other. And I'm not casting aspersions. I'm not saying which is which at this point.
Yeah,
okay. Charlie, this week Barack Obama named Chicago School CEO Arne Duncan to be his Secretary of Education. And this means that as the positions are filled, it turns out his cabinet as a whole will have what historic distinction?
It will have more basketball players than any cabinet.
Exactly since, right. Since, exactly right.
Since President Naismith's back in 1904.
There is a formidable basketball team in the proposed cabinet. Arne Duncan played professionally, or Attorney General designate.
Arne Duncan was the co-captain at your alma mater.
He was, yeah. He played, he played college basketball, which is good, but it was for Harvard, but still, it counts.
You know how I know I'm an old sports writer?
I actually interviewed
Arne Duncan when he played for Harvard.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
He was on a pretty good Harvard team, as it were.
Again, relatively
That's
speaking.
That's their motto, yeah. As it were.
I remember they had a very successful game. It came down to overtime against a local junior high school, and they did well. Anyway, there are others. Eric Holder, Attorney General designate, he played college ball. National Security Advisor James Jones played college ball. UN Ambassador Susan Rice was a star in her high school team. The revelation has set off alarm bells on K Street, where overweight white lobbyists are giving up their golf carts. They're now desperate to get some game. YMCA gyms are booked weeks in advance. CVS has experienced a run on ace bandages. And Big Tobacco and the NRA have started competing with the NBA for top draft picks. Charlie.
Yes.
A British medical journal recommends that people wear a neck brace or other protective headgear while doing what?
I know this. I just may not know the name of the video game. Guitar Hero.
No, not a video game. You're close, though. It's related to music.
Like heavy metal head thing.
Yes, it's the heavy metal head thing.
The headbanging thing.
That's the answer.
That's right. We call this the Iron Maiden syndrome.
Right.
Yeah. Orthopedics, yeah.
Heavy metal aficionados are finding themselves between rock and a neck brace. A new study published in a British medical journal shows that the dance style peculiar to heavy metal fans called headbanging may, depending on the arc and speed with which you whip your head around, can cause anything from mild head and neck injury to mild traumatic brain injury. Although the jury is out on whether the latter might be a pre-existing condition. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, or you can visit the NPR shop to pick up your WaitWait tchotchkes. Hi, you're on WaitWait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jason Finkel, and I'm stuck in Lubbock, Texas.
You're stuck in Lubbock?
Well, my wife's in graduate school, and, I'm a little blue dot stuck in a big state full of red dots?
I was about to say, that's not a very positive attitude.
Well, you know, we're getting her through, and she'll be done with her internship here very soon.
And where are you going to go when you escape from Lubbock?
Don't know. We're going to see where her job takes us.
Well, welcome to the show, Jason. You are going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will once again read three quotes from this week's news. If you correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your own home answering machine. Ready to go?
Fantastic. I am stoked. Thank you.
Here's your first quote.
Time has named him the person of the year, an effort they hope will make up for the four times this year when he wasn't on their cover.
That's the political journal, The Hotline, getting all snarky about Time Magazine's favorite cover boy of 2008. Who?
That would be our benevolent overlord, Obama.
In fact, yes. The new president shares the honor with other former honorees such as Middle America, The Computer, The Planet Earth, and you. To be fair, Time Magazine only put Obama on their cover 24 times this year. So, you know, big surprise. In fact, Time's editors almost missed the press deadline because they couldn't remember what folder they saved the story in when they wrote it last April. Now, one of the highlights of the issue, very interesting, are some never-before-seen photos of Obama as a student at Occidental College near Los Angeles in the late 1970s. He's seen in those photos doing very typical college student things for the time, like going to the beach and parting the Pacific Ocean. Healing his friend's hangovers with a touch of his hand. In a shocking development, Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich was caught on tape trying to sell the honor of being next year's Man of the Year. All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
The most important thing is that you have to control your vice president.
That, according to Politico.com, was someone with intimate knowledge of how vice presidents operate, giving advice to the next White House chief of staff. Who?
Would that be Bush?
No. I don't think Bush has figured that out yet.
Yeah. His vice president.
Boy,
Somebody with even more intimate knowledge of how vice presidents operate.
Oh, Cheney!
Yes, it was Cheney himself. He said it at a meeting of about 13 or 14 former White House chiefs of staff, of whom he is one, of course. He was chief of staff to Gerald Ford. They were there to give advice to Rahm Emanuel, the incoming chief of staff. Now, either Dick Cheney has experienced a profound awakening to the dangers of a conscienceless vice president who operates in total secrecy, violates the Constitution, and blows the cover of American intelligence agents, or he was just joking. Turns out, he was just joking.
Or he thinks he's the president and the other guys.
Well, according to it was off the limits, this meeting of former White House chiefs of staff. It was off limits to the press, but according to reports from insiders, the men in the room all let out loud laughs when Cheney made that little jape, at which point the vice president shot them all in the face.
Yeah. You know, that just never gets old.
It never does. Yeah. We were talking about that. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It's true.
Here is your last quote.
A lot of locals around here hate it. You know, it's, I didn't move to the desert to have this.
That was a tourist from Denver talking to CNN about his visit to a place known more for sand, sun, and sin, not snow. What city?
Las Vegas?
In fact, Sin City got blanketed with half a foot of snow this week.
Wow.
Most they've seen in years, palm trees bent under the weight, neon lights were dimmed, showgirls donned sequined to long johns, and prostitutes watched the local news to see which brothels were calling snow days. Did they say the Mustang Ranch yet? Did they say it? Carl, how did Jason do in our quiz?
Jason had a perfect score, Peter. Three correct answers. Jason, you win our prize.
Well done.
Thank you guys very, very much.
Jason, thank you so much for playing our game.
Bye-bye.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Roy Blunt Jr. and Amy Dickinson each has 3 points.
Yeah.
Charlie Pierce has 2.
I see.
Whoa.
All right, Charlie, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Gay rights advocates objected to Obama's selection of Pastor Rick Warren to deliver the invocation at blank.
At the inauguration.
Right. On Wednesday, automaker blank announced it would be shutting down operations for the next month.
Which one was it? was it? Chrysler.
Right. The man accused of masterminding the 1994 genocide in blank was convicted in a UN tribunal.
Rwanda.
Right. After a critical security flaw was found, Microsoft rushed to release a new security patch for blank.
Internet Explorer.
Right. Road crews in Ankeny, Iowa are using donated blank to keep roads clear of snow.
Donated salt.
Donated garlic salt. The Supreme Court ruled this week that tobacco can be sued for deceptive practices in the marketing of blank cigarettes.
Candy.
No, light cigarettes.
Oh,
on Tuesday, a private memorial service was held for pinup model blank, who died last week.
Betty Page.
85. Yes, Betty Page. Firemen in Essex, England were embarrassed after spending hours trying to rescue a blank from a telegraph pole.
An aging Earl.
A plastic toy owl.
Oh.
A passerby informed the Royal Society for the Protection of Animals that the owl had been on the telegraph pole for days without moving, so they sprang into action and spent hours with a net attempting to coax the bird to safety. When that failed, they called in the Essex Fire Service, and officers began climbing the 30-foot pole to reach the poor owl. It was then that local residents decided to tell the rescuers that the bird was a plastic toy. Presumably, they had been watching with some amusement up until that point. Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
Charlie had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Charlie has taken the lead.
Mm. We have flipped a coin. Roy has elected to go next. So, Roy, here we go, fill in the blank. The Bush administration is considering an orderly bankruptcy as a way to bail out the blank industry.
The auto industry.
Right. Impeachment proceedings continued even though the Illinois Supreme Court rejected a bid to just oust blank as governor.
Blagojevich.
Right. Federal regulators adopted new rules to regulate fees and billing practices of blank companies.
Credit card company.
Right. In an interview with ABC News, John McCain would not say whether he would support blank for president in 2012.
Sarah Palin.
Right. A cranky old man opened fire at a rap concert in Senegal after he was offended by lyrics he felt were making fun of blank.
His mama.
Cranky old men.
Oh.
Saturday Night Live came under fire from the National Federation for the Blind for its portrayal of blank.
Governor Patterson.
Right, after he announced he would not be appearing at this year's Macworld trade show, concerns about blank's health resurfaced.
Steve Jobs.
Right, marine biologists in England are conducting research to pinpoint exactly which blank is preferred by sharks.
Song, music.
Exactly, which Christmas song?
Christmas
Very
song.
Well done. Researchers at Britain's Loch Lomond Sea Life Center are planning to pipe Christmas hits into the underwater tunnels where the sharks swim, and then they'll monitor them to determine their preferences. According to senior marine biologist Chris Brown, we'll play everything from Rocking Around the Christmas Tree to Wham's Last Christmas. Sadly, it may be someone else's last Christmas because there's nothing more dangerous than interviewing a shark who's been forced to listen to endless recordings of dogs barking out jingle bells.
They like reindeer songs.
They do. Anything involving large ungulates they can eat.
And they'll sing to the researchers. Yeah. I'll be home for Christmas.
Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 17 points.
Whoa!
Roy has the lead.
Carl, how many, then, does Amy need to win?
She needs 7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
Can I just, like, give my time over to Mavis Staples? She was great.
Encore.
All right, fill in the blank. Here we go. On Tuesday, the Federal Reserve cut blanks to an all-time low.
Interest rate.
Right. In the scuffle after the shoe-throwing incident, blank got a black eye from a boom mic.
Not the president. The Maliki?
No, Dana Perino.
Oh.
She calls it her souvenir.
Yeah.
According to an internal document, U.S. security contractor blank may lose its license to work in Iraq.
Blackwater.
Right. Saying she wants to raise money for hunger relief, actress Scarlett Johansson put a blank up for sale on eBay.
Bed.
No, a used Kleenex. In the first operation of its kind in the U.S., surgeons in Ohio replaced 80% of a woman's blank.
Face.
Right. The governments of Norway, Kuwait, Jamaica, Oman, and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia were among the nations listed as donors to the Blank Foundation.
The Clinton Foundation.
Right. A German science journal placed what it thought was a classic Chinese poem on the cover of its issue on China, not realizing the poem was actually a blank.
Limerick, naughty limerick.
Close. An ad for a brothel. The Max Planck Institute was looking for something beautiful and elegant for the cover of their issue, but what they used was a Macau brothel ad advertising, quote, hot housewives in action.
Oh, Lord.
The Institute immediately apologized for its error. They said, quote, "It has now emerged that the text contains deeper levels of meaning which were not immediately accessible to a non-native speaker. Meanwhile, the brothel is doing a bang-up business with overly excited German scientists." Carl, did Amy do well enough to win?
She needed 7 to tie, but Amy had just 4 correct answers. So with 17 points, Roy Blunt Jr. is this week's champion. Hey.
Woot, woot. Very well done.
I've never heard of a score quite that high. That's really
Thank
high.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's pretty good. It's a very high score.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Barack Obama, obviously this year's Time Magazine's Man of the Year. In a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict who will be named Time Magazine's Person of the Year next year. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. The Gruber Family Foundation for support of NPR's international coverage, and the Wallace Foundation, where arts and education leaders could learn about how to bring the arts to more people. Downloads at the Knowledge Center at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our technical director is Robert Newhouse. Other engineers include Lorna White, Les Dolarchik, and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac and Jewel Dolce at Chase Bank. DJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Emily Ecton, Philip Klaperick, and Laura Colbert. This week we say farewell to Anne Cadigan, the latest graduate of the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me internship program. She is the latest of the people we've sent into the world with horrifyingly skewed ideas of what makes for appropriate workplace humor. Thanks, Anne, for everything, and good luck. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who will be the next Time Magazine Person of the Year? Charlie Pierce.
Well, in keeping of the revolutionary way he staffed his cabinet, it's a three-way tie next year, Peter, between Secretary of Defense LeBron James, Secretary of the Interior Shaquille O'Neal, and Surgeon General Dr. J.
Amy Dickinson.
George Washington. He called from 1801 and wants his face taken off our currency.
Roy Blunt Jr.
I don't know whether you noticed Mr. Madoff recently this week on TV walking around as if he had some private joke. He had a little grin on his face.
Yes, he did.
All that.
Yes, he did.
I think, I just feel this as the feel-good story we need, that just last night he made some last-minute investments. And when he goes to court, he's going to say, "Wheel it in, boys," and he will have made back all that money that he blew. And not only that, but enough money to bail out the whole country.
Well, panel, if any of those people end up as Time's Person of the Year, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, Amy Dickinson, and Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.